Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You say copyright?
Gotcha.
It is Wednesday, which means it's time for the front three. As always, with me, Adam Boltwood, the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
It's almost here.
And of course, Dave O'Brien.
Na 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 na.
Great tune, great tune. We are just 2 days away from Euro 2016, guys. We're going to be previewing every single group right here. We're also going to be talking a little bit about silly season because it is well and truly upon us, I've got to say. First, though, comment of the week time, guys. There's been some great reviews coming in. Got one from Australia here from a name I'm not going to pronounce because it looks like he's just bashed his keyboard. One of our favourite podcasts, always informative and insightful. Cheers. Thank you very much for that review. We've also got Oshbosh saying, if you be my front three, I will be your long lost hole.
Yeah. That was from the week when Adam was away.
Credit. I think he's resubmitted the review. It's come up from 2 days ago. So thank you very much, Oshbosh, for resubmitting. Also, we've got hashtag team winning who says, soon to blow up. One of my top three favorite podcasts. Great job, lads. Thank you very much for your review. Remember, get your reviews in. If you look on the description of this very podcast, you'll see a little link. If you click that, it will take you straight to the place where you can review this podcast. A little bit easier.
My favorite one was this week. We obviously upload videos and we work on this channel completely for free for no profit of our own, apart from in the long term, obviously, when we'll make gross amounts of money. It just says below, and Kristen's a guest on the video. There's the three of us and Kristen, and someone just goes, but there's four of them.
It makes no sense.
What's going on?
I imagine him just clicking it and just going, the fuck is this? I can't believe it.
I want to give comment of the week this week. I got to give comment of the week, though, to Harsh Singhal, who DM'd us, slid into the DMs on Twitter to tell us about a dream he had. Now, I'm not going to read out the whole dream because it is quite long-winded. I think it's actually funnier if I just take it completely out of context and read the last two sentences. It says, hearing this, Adam turns around, storms up to the principal and punches him squarely on his jaw and says, never mess with the lads, as he walks out of the room. Make of that what you will, guys. You can make up the rest of what preceded that in Harsh's dream. But Harsh, comment of the week there for telling us about your dream. Fantastic stuff. Thank you so much for writing in. Guys, if you want to slide into our DMs, if you want to tweet us your questions, thoughts, suggestions, deep philosophical feelings, at the front three on Twitter with the number, not the word. Let's get into it, guys. Silly season is upon us. As I said, an actual transfer deal has been done, Dave. It's Eric Bailey to Manchester United for around £25 million.
Eric Bailey and Tony Marshall up front.
Eric Bailey. How do you pronounce his name?
I think it is. I was speaking to my French-speaking colleague, and he said,
really?
You pronounce it Bay. And then I was actually on the radio this afternoon, about 6 o'clock, on Manchester XS or something like that. And they also, the presenter also said Bay. So I think it's Bay.
Bay.
I think in French, you don't pronounce the Y. But I reckon the listeners, any French listeners out there, are we saying it right? Because remember when they nailed it with Krajovac? Hopefully fucked that one up. So yeah, let's get it. But he's a good centre back.
Okay.
For his age, I'd say 22 years old. I've not watched watched that much of him, to be quite honest. But I started watching him this morning, and what I'd got from him from that sort of brief period was he's quite calm. I thought he was a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more of a, you know, an attacking centre-back in a way that goes to attack the ball, but he's quite calm. Villarreal played a 4-4-2 last season. Quite a like zonal system. The midfield four defends the back four. And what Bailly just did was, you know, sit in the middle, and he sort of comes alive when the ball goes wide or the ball comes into the penalty area. Then he'll make a clearance, he'll make an interception. His reading of the game's quite good. One thing that I think he needs to work on a bit is sometimes he switches off. So his concentration needs to improve. In that game, it was at the Real Madrid Villarreal game. He switched off once for a corner. Ronaldo pretty much should have scored if he got his head to the ball. Completely lost bait. And then there was another moment where he got in behind, I think it was his left shoulder. Just again, got clean for own goal, but you know, the Lino flagged it incorrectly offside. So I think with Bailly, he's got the raw attributes to be a really, really top centre-back. But obviously with Mourinho, just needs to learn how to defend. The concentration needs to be there for a full 90 minutes. But he does, you know, he does look good.
It's interesting that Mourinho described him as a raw talent. I think, as you say, that's the impression most people have of Bailly. Yeah. So as you said, Mourinho himself said he's going to help nurture that and fulfil his potential, which I think should be exciting. Do you think that, you know, we talked about Daley Blind, maybe he's got some question marks over his future. This move, do you reckon that sort of exacerbates that situation?
Yeah, I'd say so. I don't think Daley Blind's ever going to play centre-half for Mourinho. That'd be absolutely mental. I mean, Mourinho really changing his philosophy. You know, Daley Blind did very well at centre-back, but he's just not physical enough, he's not quick enough, he's not strong enough. But I think I hope United sign another centre back, so there's a real competition for those two starting places. You know, you still got Smalling obviously is going to be probably the number one choice, and whether Bailly and then someone else is fighting for that number one spot, the other spot. Sorry, it'd be good for United. I think they've lacked quality at centre back since the days of Nemanja Vidic and Rio Ferdinand. That was a while ago.
It was indeed. Staying on Manchester United then. Fresh off betting you last week, Dave, £20 that Zlatan Ibrahimovic is not going to score over 20 goals this season. I want to make another bet, depending on which way you're going to go on this.
Uh-oh.
Guardian this afternoon are reporting that Manchester United are going to pursue Paul Pogba after City's interest has faded. United are weighing up a formal offer for the Juventus midfielder who left in 2012. City have apparently dropped their interest as Pep Guardiola rebuilds the team. I am 100 million% sure that Paul Pogba, it will not be at Manchester United.
No, kind of agree.
You're on my page.
Two months ago, he said that he wants to stay at Juventus for one more year. So if that comes off,
it just refuses to die. It's getting a little bit tiresome.
It'd be incredible, you know, like you know, the amount of the raving I've done about Paul Pogba this last year from watching quite a lot of Juventus. You know, it'd be absolutely perfect to take United into this next era. What he could do tactically, he could play. One of the two pivots, sitting behind whoever's going to play attacking midfield, or in the bigger game, could even go into attacking midfield and play that role to perfection in a way. He's a player that would really change United. And again, they should never have let him go. Whatever did happen with Fergie or whatever, mistake or not.
He wouldn't have become this player. Maybe he would have.
Very good point.
Maybe he would have gone down a different path. Maybe he wouldn't have realised his potential. I mean, it was always said that he had incredible potential. I think, you know, Ferguson obviously has some parting words about him. But then, yeah. Did you ever see that interview with Rio Ferdinand? I think it was on Copa 90, who sort of said...
Oh, yeah.
I think it was Pogba and who else was it?
Ravel Morrison.
We're looking up to Ravel Morrison.
Yamazai,
yeah.
Wasn't he, or something?
Yeah.
Looking up to Ravel Morrison, as you know, Rio Ferdinand said he's never seen a player so good at that age. And even Paul Pogba was looking up to Ravel Morrison.
It's a shame Ravel Morrison robbed his girlfriend at knife point or something like that.
Yeah, you know,
what a terrible dude.
It's never going to go down too well.
It's pretty miserable.
Yeah. The other Manchester United rumour doing the rounds today, Dave, is Nemanja Matic to Old Trafford. This one was in the Sun, actually, earlier today, so you know it's true.
It's got to be true, right?
I spoke to your friend, colleague, Greg Stobart today, the chief reporter for Squawker.com, Dave. And he told
owner
me...
Owner of the haulage company.
He told me there's a little bit of truth in this one. Matic is open to leaving. I think it's obvious. Mourinho is obviously a big admirer. But he was sort of saying the stumbling block, you know, obviously, is that Manchester United, as much as they want it, Chelsea do not want to do business with them, and especially not Mourinho.
Yeah, I think it would be a silly thing for Chelsea to sell him. But if you get the Nemanja Matic of the 2014-15 season... The one that won 101 tackles in the Premier League, just under 20 more than any other player. You've got a real talent there. He sort of played two roles in the midfield. You know, you had Cesc Fabregas in there that was the the passer, but Matic sort of played... No, sorry, Fabregas is the creator, and Matic played both roles as the passer and the destroyer. It was basically two men in one, and that was a game against Manchester City where he just absolutely destroyed Yaya Toure, mentally, physically, got in his face, won big tackles against him, muscled him off the ball. It was just a, you know, it was a fine display of that Chelsea team. I think that was sort of like showed what that Chelsea team really was, that physicality, that strength, and that, you know, the sort of the want to beat your opponent and outplay your opposite number. And like, yeah, if you can get that player to Manchester United, it'd be a great signing, but I doubt Chelsea are going to want to do business. You know, if he's going anywhere, he's leaving the Premier League, right?
Yeah, you'd assume so. Although Chelsea did sell old Petr Cech to Arsenal, although that was kind of a favour, you know, for a long time servant. Does this move, if it is true though, Dave, make you worry about Bastian Schweinsteiger or Morgan Schneiderlin? Does that make you upset that the prospect of one of these sort of players leaving? Or
no, I think Morgan Schneiderlin will fit under Mourinho 100%. I think he's a Mourinho-type player, works hard, wins the ball, distributes. He's sort of like a Nemanja Matic in a way, maybe not to the same level as 14-15 Matic, but similar type of player. But someone like Bastian Schweinsteiger, obviously, again, has been injured, so there needs a bit of... Oof. I don't know, they need some new blood in central midfield, because I've not been impressed. The second half of the season, Ander Herrera just didn't look bothered. He just wasn't bothered. He looked unfit. He looked so unfit. He couldn't make it past like 70 minutes.
What do you think about Ander Herrera in terms of, you know, we spoke about how Juan Mata's at risk and Mourinho's going to ship him off because, you know, assuming he is too lightweight, doesn't want to track back, doesn't, you know, have the qualities of a Mourinho player. With Herrera, you know, you feel like he could go either way. Do you think his future's under threat? Or
I think his future's under threat. I think he's playing for his United future. I think that he's a player that could absolutely blossom under Mourinho. Because he could play that sort of Frank Lampard role in a way, sort of coming from midfield and scoring goals, something that he did quite well in periods for Manchester United. But that's the issue with Ander Herrera is his form's never been consistent. Maybe that's because he's not been consistently playing, you know, a little bit unfair to the player. But like Jan Azai, like Bastian Schweinsteiger, like Morgan Schneiderlin, in a way, this is their last sort of chance for United, really. You know, you've got to look at it that they'll make it now, that's it. Mourinho ain't going to mess about with them. It's going to be in or out. But the interesting thing with Herrera, you know, since joining the club, he'd scored more goals than any central midfielder had managed in like the past five seasons. So he has the potential. He really does. And I really want him to succeed because I like him. I like it. when he's playing well, very good tackles, passes very well, you know, can finish. It's just frustrating. Again, it's another player that's been so frustrating under Louis van Gaal.
I feel like we've given Dave a lot of Man United ammunition there, Lawrence. I want to even it up with a few little Liverpool tidbits. Not that you can only talk about Liverpool, but I want to even it up with your club. I said silly season is upon us. It truly is, because Edinson Cavani and Gonzalo Higuain have been linked with moves to Anfield in the last week, Lawrence. I think it's fair to say neither of those are going to happen. But if they were, which one would you prefer? Who would you like to see line up, especially with the question marks over Benteke's future? He's come out and said, you know, today he's going to consider his future after the Euros.
Do I have to pick one or the other?
Yeah, I think so. That's how it works.
Honestly, I'd rather go for Higuain over Cavani.
Yeah.
I just think he's more of what Liverpool need. Liverpool lacked finishing, and they lacked a lot of other things from any sort of fit striker last season. But if I had to pick one, it would have to be Higuain. I wouldn't really like to pick either. Basically, you want someone to replace that Benteke role, someone who can do something a little bit handier than Benteke. I was really impressed with Divock Origi at the end of last season. You know, the roles that he played in the Europa League really impressed me. And the way that he played him, the hunger and the passion with which he played him was fantastic. I think Klopp wants someone who's more consistent, put that way. Maybe Benteke can be that, but maybe not.
The other interesting, or maybe not so interesting, Liverpool news is that PSG are in for Philippe Coutinho. Apparently, they've had an offer rejected, Lawrence. Coutinho, you know, sort of been speaking on international duty about how he wants to win titles, and he's sort of been talking up, you know, hints that he potentially might want to move away.
The thing is, I don't quite know whether that's whether that is an interview term associated with Brazil or Inter, because he never really, I mean, what he won at Inter, I don't think he was all that active for.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think there were a number of clubs who apparently were questioning how talented he was and whether he's worth the money. You know, obviously I'm not questioning loyalty or anything like that in the modern game, but I think those have been those quotes are being attributed to make a story. You know, Dani Alves has obviously said, "Oh, I'd say Coutinho should leave because you know, if he wants to go and win things." I just don't know if PSG would be that sort of place.
That's the thing, isn't it? You feel almost disappointed if he did leave to PSG. But I mean, how upset would you be if he did leave Liverpool? Because obviously he's a massively talented player, you know, so skillful, and you know, we've seen the sort of goals he can score. However, he doesn't seem to be consistently decisive.
He's had some fantastic strikes. He's amazing to watch for that reason. Yeah. I'd love him to stay. But if he left, I also think there'll be caveats with which he'd leave. So, right. You know, you sort of think, do I really worry about a guy who maybe faded in and out of games, who maybe when we needed him at the end of last season, to come through in games like the Sevilla game, completely drifted out. You'd always have thought about what could potentially have happened with Coutinho. But he is so good to watch. And there's something lovely about, him and Firmino up front. That is brilliant. And also, he's sort of spoken about how happy he is under Klopp. And more than sort of destroying what your idea is about the player, it's more that you would hope that the system and the idea of playing at Liverpool under Klopp, being happy with the manager, would sort of trump that.
I spoke there about being disappointed if he did go to PSG, because I'm not saying it's a step down, but it just feels, you know, to go to PSG where the league isn't as competitive would be a shame, I feel like.
It feels a bit like a cheat code, doesn't it? You'd rather, at least if he's going to go anywhere, he sort of goes to Barcelona, Real Madrid almost.
On a similar note, the reports are like Unai Emery, not getting the Everton job, obviously going to Ronald Koeman. He apparently is off to PSG. Laurent Blanc set to be sacked, which is not a massive surprise. But, I mean, Dave, Unai Emery, I quite want to see him in the Premier League. For him to go to PSG, I mean, does that excite you? Do you think he'll do a good job there?
It's one of those ones where you're like, oh, no, another favourite manager's going to the evil PSG. Mm. I prefer him with a smaller budget and sort of building around one player. Again, that could be the issue at PSG. They've sort of got too many superstars now in a way to build around one player. Maybe with Zlatan going, it opens up to one of them to be the focal point. You know, maybe an Edison Cavani. You know, Cavani under Emery would be so, so good. He's obviously really, really good with strikers. Carlos Bacca, Kevin Guerrero this year. So it could work out quite nicely for them. But again, it's the evil PSG dominating the world that nobody wants to see.
Maybe Emery could end up pitching up Southampton. That would be interesting. Sweet. Yeah. Seeing as Koeman, it looks like Koeman's off. Nothing's been officially confirmed. Everton have apparently agreed a deal with Southampton to sort of pay the compensation. So it's not 100% done yet, but it looks like it's on its way. Other managers,
that really would be quite a deal. That'd be a really nice deal, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we did speak about it on Sunday. I mean, some people see it as a step sideways, but I think we set out the case that it could be seen as a step up, especially with the investment in Everton.
I just think it's a shame that no one's looking at Martin O'Neill. I mean, he is the ultimate headline in many ways.
He definitely makes headlines.
One minute he isn't saying something sexist, and then saying, "I'm sorry, I didn't realise it was that." Definitely. Next minute he's saying he's calling players a bunch of queers.
Definitely go and check out. I recommend go and check out the Second Captains podcast this week. They talk about that in detail. Obviously, an Irish podcast. Martin O'Neill sort of put his foot in it last week by suggesting that him and Roy Keane, I think they took a scouting trip, or they went to an American football game or something like that. And, you know, someone asked him if it was just him and Roy Keane. He was like, no, there are other guys there. You know, I wouldn't want it to give you an impression that me and Roy are queers. And it was kind of like, can't really say that.
Why would you not want to give that?
It's just
impression.
And they were sort of saying on the podcast, guys, definitely go and listen to it. I'll leave a link in the description. But, you know, he's obviously an older man of a different generation, has put his foot in it before and probably will again. But it was interesting they were sort of talking about how it wasn't made a massive deal out of in Ireland. And it may have been a much bigger deal if, say, Roy Hodgson had said that over here. I can't imagine. I'm not sure Roy Hodgson would lose his job, but I think, you know, there'd definitely be calls for his head.
I think people would mix up with the headlines. I mean, first of all, any homophobic comment is probably too much. But people also mix that with the headline of a few years ago that there is definitely one gay England player in the England squad. And you do sort of think, you know, it's not so much that it offends me, it's that if there is someone who's gay in the England squad and there is that sort of a climate, why would you want to come out when someone so clearly makes comments like that?
Yeah, very strange.
It's a strange... There are other transfers. What about Nyangalan says Conte is trying to persuade him to go to Chelsea.
Of course. Why not? I think he'd fit in very well though, wouldn't he, Dave?
Yeah, I think he would. Box to box. Decent shot on him. I think he'd fit into the Chelsea midfield that lacks maybe a little bit of dynamism in there with Matic not in form and, you know, Cesc Fabregas being Cesc Fabregas, very inconsistent last season. So maybe, you know, shoehorn him in. John Obi Mikel holding. Maybe perfect little midfield.
The biggest
John Obi Mikel
transfer news that I want to end on, the one that's sort of blown up in the last day or so, is, of course, at Manchester City. Trying to sign Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, obviously the Bundesliga player of the season last year, scored 36 goals in the league last season. Long been linked with a move to Real Madrid because of an apparent promise he made a dying relative, essentially. But it looks like Manchester City may be the club to put him to the post. 60 million is said to be the asking price. I mean, do you think he's worth that money, Lawrence? Do you think that is the sort of money they should be investing? They need that sort of player at the club now.
I definitely think he's worth that kind of money, only purely because City are one of those sides that can spend that kind of money. He's a fantastic striker. I think he'd do great things for City. I'd love to see him alongside those other guys. And I think more recently he's shown that there's more to his game than just what maybe people assumed he had just a few years ago. So, you know, maybe to take it a step further, he'd have to go to a super team like this. But again, it would be a shame to see him leave someone like Borussia Dortmund so easily.
Yeah, it feels like almost the spine has been ripped out of him in a sort of Mortal Kombat fatality move. Hummel's gone, Gundogan gone, you know, Aubameyang gone.
I know they're trying to.
I know they're trying to. They're trying to rebuild.
Yeah, but have you seen who they've brought in?
Talk to me, Dave, because I was about to come on to that. Talk to me about these players and give Dortmund
transfers there, right? They've just pretty much bought all the best young players in Europe for fun.
Yeah. It is weird, isn't it, why they all go there? I don't know why other people aren't on that.
Yeah, well, you know, players like, you know, Ousmane Dembele, we've spoken about him before. What a talent he is. Like, probably the best, you know, one of the best 18-year-old. No, the best 18-year-old in world football right now. Maybe he's 19 now, gone up, but he was 18 when they signed him. Absolutely insane.
Mark Bartra, who we mentioned last week. Sebastian Loda. Emre Moore, who's the very talented young Turkish player. So I hear, and of course Julian Weigel's there as well. So, and is this process of Dortmund? As I mean, we spoke about when Chris was on the show. It's they've have a weird knack of being able to rebuild and find these gems that enable them to continue and sort of compete at the top.
And you know, I'd Pasalak in there. You had Pulisic in there. I think what they need to do is like create a generation together, and they need that generation to go through the club together. To try and get them to stay there together. Do you know what I mean? Like youth players going through at the same time.
Yeah. Although I do sort of think they become even better rough diamonds when they go to a club like this. I think the institution brings that out of them.
In terms of Aubameyang to City though, Dave, you'd expect that means Wilfried Bonny is going to leave. That move never really quite worked out. Quite a lot of money for that player, for little return, you have to say. But in terms of Aubameyang, of course, bags of pace. I've played with the team of the season version on FIFA. He's 96. It's ridiculous. But having him there, it just takes that pressure off Sergio Aguero, because whenever he comes down with an injury, whatever it may be in the season, it feels like Manchester City's season just stalls.
Yeah, you'd say so, but like the interesting thing is if they do sign him, where the hell does he play? Because you know at Dortmund they pretty much play with one striker, right? They play a 4-3-3. They have Tuchel has played with a 4-4-2 with Ramos and Aubameyang out like you know maybe five times this season in all competitions. But like the partnership with Aguero and Aubameyang, that could be quite interesting. You know, Aubameyang stretching the opposition, running behind, and Aguero operating in that little pocket of space. Maybe this is where Aguero needs to play to sort of stay fit in a way, not having to consistently sprint in behind, but playing in the hole and being explosive from there. Because we all know what he can do in and around the penalty area in terms of his shots. You know, he's got a good eye for a pass. and he has the skills to pay the bills. So I think with Aubameyang and Aguero up front, it could work out quite nicely. But then we all know that Pep don't like playing two strikers, really. So there's a lot of questions. Will Aubameyang be pushed out wide again? Because he wasn't great playing out wide for Dortmund. He struggled a little bit, to be honest. Aguero ain't going to go out there. So if they sign two, it's like you've got two of the same chess piece in a way, where you need something else. You need your queen. So I don't know.
I do think those two are different enough. But yeah, there are a lot of metaphors. I do think there are enough different qualities to both players, though.
Could you imagine both?
Pep will be the manager that can see that.
Could you play both up top together, though, Dave?
I mean, I
can. I think you could, but then like Pep would want control of midfield, so that means they're playing a 3-5-2, maybe, which could work. You know, did that. You know, some periods in the season, Muller and Lewandowski did play centrally together, so it's not impossible. But it would be a Premier League 3-5-2.
Would you play in a 3-3-4, Dave?
Exactly, or even the 3-3-4, which is Conte's dream formation for Chelsea. Lawrence,
what, it is a pretty good it does seem like the right formation. Like 3-3-4 sounds like such an exciting formation, doesn't it?
3-3-4. Is it?
Yeah.
Is it Aubameyang? Or is it
no front three though?
Aubameyang, because I've heard
Aubameyang.
Of course, Adam asking to language professionals.
Yeah, especially. But talking of pronouncing player names,
yeah,
I want to talk about a little article. Was it you, Lawrence, who sent this through? Or was it you, Dave?
I think it was Dave.
Yeah. I love articles like this. There's a little article
going around. It's on the UEFA website. Again, I'll link this in the description of the podcast, teaching you guys how to pronounce the Euro player names correctly. Introduce yourself to a new language is how the website describes it. There's some interesting ones in there. Ones that, I've got to say, have taken me a little bit by surprise.
Really?
Michy Batshuayi, in case you ever didn't know to pronounce that one. Obviously, the Belgium striker.
Batshuayi.
It's not, I keep saying Alderweireld. Alderweireld, obviously, the Spurs Belgium centre-back. Apparently, it's Alderweireld. I didn't know. Alderweireld, guys.
Mm.
What else is there? There's,
and then, there's the Albanian team who have got such names as
Husai.
Yeah, there's one.
He's the one to watch. Right back.
Where is it? Lorik Sana. I always like words which have got T and S next to them because it lets you do that sort of noise. That's quite nice. Lorik Sana.
It is Can. It's not Chan. It's not anything else. It's Can, by the way. Emre Can?
That just sounds ridiculous, though, doesn't it?
It's throwing me for a loop, this thing.
I just wanted to hear Dave say them because Dave's never said a player's name right in his life.
Whoa. Bernadeschi.
Well, that's
see? But yeah, he's just ordered a pizza in three different languages.
What's the name of the Polish goalkeeper who used to play for Arsenal, plays for Swansea?
Fabianski.
What's his first name?
Łukasz.
Łukasz? What the hell? Łukasz.
Yeah.
Łukasz.
You know that.
Well, good.
Łukasz.
Łukasz
Fabianski. It's me, Łukasz.
What? Łukasz. Sorry,
Łukasz.
What was that?
No, I like that. No.
Polish is quite a pretty. It's actually quite a nice language to listen to, I think. When we spent 2012 there, and the people are very friendly and they really love teaching the language. So Łukasz actually sounds quite nice.
Łukasz.
Although also, I imagine they just go, yeah, of course it's Łukasz Fabianski, and then it sounds normal. Whereas English people go, oh, Łukasz, and walk around saying it ridiculously for the next half hour.
Also, I realized recently I've been saying this wrong, but I thought it was Hakan Çalhanoğlu, but it's Çalhanoğlu. Çalhanoğlu. There you go. See? Çalhanoğlu.
I still like the best name. I mean, a classic Dortmund player is Blaszczykowski. Just a great name. I also love how Republic of Ireland have just got two names.
Yeah, they have shown you how to pronounce Eric Dyer as well.
Kieran is Kieran.
Kieran.
Hey, Kieran. Hey, Karen. You're queer.
Karen.
How do you say
Get
queer?
Get over here, Karen.
All right, let's
queer. Hey, queer.
Milek. Get over here.
I'll leave the link in the description just so you know how to pronounce every single Euro's name. And on that note, guys, let's move in to previewing Euro 2016.
Brazil.
Right, let's get in to our Euro 2016 preview. There's only one place to start, and that is Group A, of course.
Oh.
Albania, France.
No one starts with F. That's what pisses me off. F never gets any fucking attention.
We can go
backwards.
That's why
it's called Group F.
Do you want to go backwards?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, we'll start with Group F. There's only one place to start. Austria, Hungary, Iceland, and Portugal, guys. Let's talk a little bit about Portugal first. Obviously, well, I suppose just ahead of Austria, the favourites to maybe top their group. Perceived as a bit of a one-man team, Lawrence. But they've got other players in there. Quaresma, you know, Sanchez. They've got other talented players in that squad.
Yeah, other massively talented players in that team. But I do think that overall they don't seem to be able to find a system to bring all these individual talents together. I think that's part of the problem with Portugal, is that they have a lot of very good... technically gifted players. I mean, you know, Quaresma was one of the great waves of the next generation that people were so excited about. And now people would argue that he's beyond that, rightly so. But it doesn't take away from his technical ability. I think for that reason, it's a little bit like watching a basketball team at a tournament, because, you know, if one player doesn't do it, they'll pass it off to someone else. But it still doesn't mean that's always going to work for them. For me, like I say, they still haven't found a system where they're able to go entirely through a tournament without sort of fucking something up or having something go wrong. You know, I know, you know, they've had some impressive Euro showings. You know, I remember just a few years ago when they lost out to Greece with a young Ronaldo, I think it was. And, you know, Lisbon is a great capital. Adam, I was recently there on holiday.
Beautiful.
But it does still seem, what I was going to say was, it does seem a little bit like, they aren't as hyped anymore about this Portuguese generation as maybe they should be.
They do.
And it does seem a little bit like the horse has bolted almost for some of these guys. In many ways, it's Ronaldo's last chance to win the Euros.
Yes.
And when I say in many ways, I mean the only way. The time is running out.
They did win 7-0 tonight at friendly. It was against Estonia, so we can't give them too much credit, as it were. Quaresma.
Yeah, but then Spain starring. Lost to Georgia, so.
Yeah. What about Austria then, Dave? Obviously, David Alaba, the main man. They've got Spurs' own Kevin Wimmer in there, Sebastian Prodl, and Arnautovic, you know. So
Prodl. I think they're a very good side. Obviously, everyone's dark horses, no longer the dark horses. So I think teams will set up defensively against them. Austria like to press, like to dominate possession. Someone like Janukovic could be one of the players of the tournament. You know, he got 10 assists in the Bundesliga this season, very good from set pieces. Could link that midfield and attack together. Players like Arnautovic as well, you just don't know who's going to turn up. I imagine he's going to be in the shop window wanting to leave this summer. From Stoke, obviously rejecting the contract. So there's a lot of players in there that sort of need to show themselves in a way, like Janko, the big striker. Was he at Wolves or someone like that? Maybe I'm thinking of somebody. I think I'm another Austrian striker. But yeah, no, I think he's another player that could you know, explode onto the scene. Obviously quite old, but coming into the prime of his career as a target man. So Austria is going to be a really interesting side to watch, I think.
Hungary, yeah. I feel like, could well finish bottom. Set pieces, obviously, their specialty. Over half of their goals in qualifying came from set pieces. But you feel like it'd be difficult to them finish above Iceland, maybe, Lawrence.
Really? Obviously, I mean, you do. I guess that's what's interesting, is Iceland obviously had such an incredible qualifying story, you know, and obviously coming out of and off the back of what the wonderful stories that Chris Hennig tells about, you know, from the financial desolation that the country was feeling, this team was sort of crafted because of the necessity of making players go to other countries and not being able to keep them, and therefore the sort of finances crafting these diamonds out of the rough, if you like. And, you know, that still, I think, very much sits with them. However, I still think there are some wonderfully gifted players in the Hungary side. You know, they've got some of the mainstays, the guys at the back. I think it's Kadar is how I'm going to say it, who plays for Lech Poznan. And then obviously alongside him, you've got, I think it's Guzmix, but I don't know if I'm right in saying that. And then up front, there's some just wonderfully talented players. I definitely can't say this guy's name.
Where's the pronunciation guide, Lawrence? Where's your guide?
I'm literally just matching him up to that
looking
right
at
now.
It right now.
Let me just find it. It's Zuzak. So Zuzak, and then obviously Liverpool fans will remember the guy who was always labelled as the next big thing at Liverpool and Rafa Benitez's wonder kid, Christian Nemeth, who left Liverpool sort of in a blaze of disappointing glory and now is off in the Middle East. So something disappointing there because he was a massive talent. But I think you're right. I think it'll probably go, for me, this group's going to go...
Yes.
Portugal, Austria, Iceland.
Yes.
Hungary. Really?
Yeah, Dave, you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. That's it. Down.
It is because you know what? It is a lot of those results are about whether Portugal turn up.
Yes.
If Portugal don't turn up, or if Portugal are surprised by one of these teams, then you know the group structure can completely change. And that's the problem with having someone who's sort of so on and off as Portugal. Austria very much have the potential to finish top here.
On a related, but yet entirely unrelated note.
I love Austria.
Did you know every Icelandic surname ends with sun?
Sun.
Because
everyone, Adam.
Icelanders
because they
have
don't
continued
see any.
To use their traditional name system, which was formerly used by all Nordic nations. The Icelandic system is thus not based on family names, although some do have family names. Generally, a person's last name indicates the first name of his or her father, followed by son.
That's the same as Mac in Scotland, and the same as
really?
O in Ireland, like O'Brien, son of Brian.
That is,
you know, this isn't just a football podcast. This is a podcast of knowledge.
This is probably one of the best.
Here we go.
Come on.
Is that Martin O'Neill's middle name is Michael, and Michael O'Neill's middle name is Martin?
My God!
Are you kidding me?
It's things like that which show that those two are long lost homophobic twins.
Speaking of Martin O'Neill, we come on to Group E, guys. It's the group of death.
Legally, I don't think I can say that. By the way, I'm not saying that's actually true. I don't want a copyright claim against me. Right?
Allegedly, just put an allegedly in the Lawrence. You're covered. Belgium, Italy, the Republic of Ireland, and Sweden in this group. Of course, Belgium, not just favourites to top the group, Lawrence. But of course, second, third favourites to win the entire bloody thing?
The
second in the world, you know? That must mean.
Yeah, but those rankings really.
Yeah, that means.
You know,
that means a lot.
Oh, mean shit, bro!
But they've got.
Let's go down the route with Belgium, that they have an incredibly talented squad. They've
insanely
got Spurs in the back line, Chelsea in the midfield, and up front, they've got such a plethora of talent and so many different. As I keep putting it, sights on their gun. It does strike me that, you know, this team could do incredibly well at the tournament. However, I think there are some real issues with the team in that, you know, in playing a side like Italy, how are they going to play against them? Someone incredibly defensive, and maybe someone who's a little bit more tactically savvy. The goalkeepers, maybe they have a slight issue over those guys. And I think overall, people are billing them as the full package, but I don't quite know how well this package wraps up. You've got Thibaut Courtois, who's obviously the starting goalkeeper, and then Sam Meunier backing him up.
You never want Meunier as a backup. You do feel
But at the same time, Courtois is fantastic. So.
Yes. You do feel like Courtois, going forward, going forward, they're very strong. Dave, De Bruyne, Hazard, Carrasco, I didn't even know was Belgian. Romelu Lukaku, Christian Benteke out front, but... At the back, somewhat, depending on how they're set up and who plays in what position, that is where their weakness is.
Yeah, I think their weakness is also up front, not because of their peripheral talent, it's because you've got to make one of those men your main man.
Romelu Lukaku.
And you have to build a system around them. Yeah, well then what's Hazard doing? What's De Bruyne doing? They doing the running? I don't think so. I don't think that's the issue with Belgium, is they're going to be very disjoint. And again, the fullbacks has not been addressed. Jordan Lukaku's come in... in some of the friendlies, but it doesn't look like he's going to start. Whereas I feel he really should, because he's the only natural fullback they sort of have in their squad. There's any good,
but Dave, surely the movement up front. I think that surely Belgium's idea will be to stretch the other team a little bit, and that's why they've got certain members in the squad. I mean, you know, Origi and Lukaku are both great outs for their team this season. Can we maybe look at that as one of their approaches?
But that's, I think that'll be the issue. They're like a mismatch of loads of different styles in a way. Like, they've got some fantastic counter-attacking players. De Bruyne, and you'd probably say Lukaku would be pretty decent in that situation.
But then the responsibilities he's put on them, what then?
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. Like, for example, in midfield, Witzel and Fellaini. That ain't going to break anyone down. You know, that ain't going to pass anyone to death. You know what I mean? Like, they've only got one style, Dave,
But at the same time, Dave, it's also not going to let anyone through.
But then that's why I think it will, because it'll be so disjoint. Is Hazard ain't going to track back? Carrasco ain't going to track back? De Bruyne ain't going to track back? And Lukaku ain't track back? That means that's a broken team.
What about Italy? Because obviously, traditionally, great defence. Buffon's there. They've got Barzagli, Chiellini, Bonucci. But then when you look further forward, it doesn't look as strong. It doesn't look as strong, Dave, especially up front, as it has in recent years. There doesn't seem to be as many options.
No, definitely. You don't have a Luca Toni or a Totti. You've got a Pella and a Edda, which is a pretty rubbish downgrade from what they had. And obviously in midfield, they're missing Verratti and Marchisio, two big, big players there. So it's going to be an interesting Italy midfield. I sort of think they're going to go with a 3-5-2, Buffon in goal, Barzagli, Bonucci, Chiellini. That's, you know, that back four is definitely going to be there. Then I think De Rossi will sit in front of them. Then midfield, I think Candreva on the right, Ferenzi, Giaccherini and Darmian. And then Pella, and I'd hope Insignia up top. But again, that's such a poor Italy team from what we've seen in the past.
There's Zaza and Chirimobili as well.
Yeah, I quite like Zaza. But I just don't think he likes them. I feel that he's been rotating his strikers for the past, you know, 2 years or three, however long he's been in charge. He's just not found a combination that works.
Yeah,
so I just feel Italy are going to have a lot of tactical conundrums that they're going to have to solve in the tournament. But
they've got a very good
defence.
I did almost feel like Mario Balotelli gave a lot of coaches an easy out almost because, you know, his mercurial talent meant that people would sort of go, well, he's got to be in the team. And then at the same time, if he let them down, then they sort of go, well, that's the nature of it, isn't it? That's what happens, the nature of Mario. And then people would almost go, yeah, you're right. You know, I was at the final at the last tournament and saw them get absolutely taken apart by Spain. And I think in many ways that still sticks with them a little bit.
We move on to Ireland then. My second team, since my girlfriend is Irish. Not many people
have a girlfriend?
Yes.
No.
I've mentioned that before, haven't I? but obviously...
You're in the Martin O'Neill camp.
That's why I say I've got a girlfriend. So just so people don't think I'm not going to say it. Republic of Ireland, though, guys, not many people give them a chance. People are saying they're going to finish bottom of the group. They don't have a massive amount of talent in their squad, it has to be said. Although they're a hard working side, Dave. They've got Jonathan Waters, potential balance.
Come on, that's so cliched.
No, but you know.
Let's be honest, they're absolutely shit. But they're going to do great and they're going to qualify at them. No, I don't think they've got the talent anymore, really. You know, the players that you used to look at, the likes of Robbie Keane, coming to the end of his career. Shane Long could do a bit for them, but who's going to create for that? It's just it's a poor side. It's one of the poorest Republic of Ireland sides. That have, you know, they've done well to get to the Euros, but I think that's going to be the peak of this campaign and the peak for Keane and the other fella that's a bit of a weapon.
Disappointing.
Do you think there's a bit of an issue is that this team has sort of pressed the self-destruct button at the wrong time almost, or media-wise anyway? What if
everything is going on off the pitch?
Well, it's just, you know, the people just seem to think that Roy Keane says these comments to sort of further his own interests ahead of anyone else. But I tend to think he's relatively correct in the way that he assesses his side. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I read a quote by Roy Keane. I think that can't be really attributed to him.
He's a little
Do you know
bit...
what I mean? He says something about Robbie Keane stepping off the plane in a cap and thinking that he's big time. And that he said that you should just put him straight back on the plane. But you do sort of think in the long term, maybe that's what would serve Ireland quite well. There's sort of contrasting ideas with Ireland. And it's sort of taken away from the fun because everyone's taken it so bloody seriously.
I think people realise that some of the stuff he says is tongue-in-cheek there. I think just the way he says these things, I don't know how effective a management tactic it is.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Especially seeing as he's the assistant manager, you have to question Frank, why he's coming out and saying anything. So the famous thing he said about Aidan McGeady recently was, after his performance last night, he can do a lot better, but maybe that's the story of Aidan's career. And it's so withering and such a damning put down. You're like, wow, what effect is that going to have on Aidan McGeady? Now, apparently,
imagine him just walking back into the dressing room and just sort of go, and McGeady being like, mate, that was bloody harsh. And him just being like, yeah, but it's true. Get back out there.
Well, apparently he's like, it's been smoothed over. You know, it's all been smoothed over. I don't know whether Roy Keane apologised, which I can't imagine something Roy Keane has ever done. But apparently it's all been smoothed over now. So I don't know if the off the pitch or off the field distractions are going to have too much of a detrimental impact. But I think Dave's right in saying that it is a poor squad. And although, like I said, they are a hard working side, and you've seen they can get results against Germany in qualifying, Shane Long scoring that famous goal. I think if they can get a result against Sweden in their first game, who we'll come on to, I think things will be looking bright because they'll be hoping they could maybe pull off something against Italy and finish in at best third place. And of course, as we know, it's the four best place third finishing teams that go through. They've got a chance, but it's a long shot, I'd say. The other team who are sort of vying for that third position, essentially, along with Italy as well, because there's nothing set in stone. Are Sweden, of course, Dave. Again, another team build as a one-man team. It's all about Zlatan Ibrahimovic. But do you see other qualities in this side?
Yeah, I think they're going to be a real unknown in the tournament because they've not been talked about at all. I think Zlatan, we all know what Zlatan can do. This season, he's been incredible. We've spoke about him many times in the podcast. But what's interesting, it'll be, you know, the players that have come from that 2015 under-21 Euro winning side. You know, players like Lindelof, players like Ludwig, and maybe Luik as well. I think that is the correct pronunciation, but the central midfielder that's playing next to Kim Kallstrom. I think the integration of these players, and obviously Jonathan Gudetti, who's, you know, a decent striker, a striker that's been very unlucky with illness. You know, when he was at Feyenoord, he had an absolute Will Deeney of the season, scored 20 goals in 23 games, and then got very ill. Missed the next season, and then went to Celtic on loan, scored 15 goals in 35 games, and now at Celta Vigo, scoring 12 goals in 37 games. But I think he's a talent that could be, you know, get him up front with Zlatan. You've got a pretty decent front two there, and I feel the rest of the team's just going to work around them, and they know what their strengths are, and that's get the ball to Zlatan, and that isn't a bad strategy.
Right. It's part of the issue with Sweden, though, isn't it? Is that they sort of lack in other places, though. Like defensively, you imagine that's what they've got, that soft and very slow core. They lack a bit of nip in the back line.
Yeah, again, a player that's really impressed me this season at centre half, Lindelof, at Benfica, very physical centre back.
If they David, what is he? How old is he? 20, maybe 21, 22?
I think he's 22, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I think he's around that age anyway.
21.
Okay, he's 21. You know, but it's still possible to isolate those players, and I just worry that playing against, you know, such talented players such as Italy and Belgium, they're going to quite easily be able to isolate a player like that, and especially against someone like Belgium, I think you're going to get rocked.
Give me your order, Lawrence, your prediction.
Belgium, Italy, Sweden, Republic of Ireland.
I'm going to say Belgium, Italy, Republic of Ireland, Sweden finishing bottom. Ireland are going to go through as one of the best places.
It's the hope of that third place that will kill you, isn't it?
It's the hope that kills you. Dave, what are you saying?
Well, I'm going to go with Belgium, Sweden, Italy, ooh, then the Republic of Ireland.
Do you really think Italy, Sweden are going to do that well?
I can see it.
Very well.
Dave, have you suddenly got a confidence in Sweden just because Zlatan keeps flirting
with Manchester United? Player, essentially.
Yeah, you know, I feel, I just feel it, Lawrence. You know, sometimes when you feel these things, you just got to go with the feeling.
What you're right, Dave. You don't want to be free from desire, do you?
No, you don't, mate. No, not at all.
What are you feeling about Group D then? Not the group of death, quite, but four very good teams in there. Spain, Turkey, Croatia, the Czech Republic. Let's come to Spain first, because I think it's a fascinating situation there in essentially trying to win an unprecedented third European Championship in a row. But after that World Cup, there's a lot of question marks over that team, despite their qualifying campaign where they conceded, I think, just three goals.
They just lack identity, don't they? That's the issue. They had an identity with Xavi in central midfield and the rest of those ball players, but feel like that generation's gone and they haven't embraced the new generation. They're what I'd like to call the Atletico Madrid generation.
Ooh.
The generation that dogged, that fight, that play 4-4-2, that play a very zonal system, that press, that counterattack. Like Villarreal, like Sevilla, like Atletico Madrid. They have the components to do that. They have Adderiz up front. They've got Morata up front. They've got Nolito that could potentially play up front. Then they could play Koke out wide, Saul, Niguez out wide, maybe Isco out wide, and then two central midfielders, Busquets, Xavi, Thiago, whoever you want to put. But be really dogged. I feel like they've kind of lost their bottle, and they should go down this Atletico Madrid route because it's very, very functional and works. We've seen, you know, the Champions League final, you know, what, two times in the past, what, for 3 years, 4 years? So it's one of those things where Spain should be moving to that model. It's sort of like the anti-capitalist model in Spain, where the rich teams play their certain flamboyant style of football, and for the other teams to keep up, they have to play this attritional game that gets results. And I feel like Spain should move that way, because quite frankly, not beating Georgia, losing to Georgia, it's quite pathetic.
Wow. Damning in diamond there from Dave O'Brien. What about the Czech Republic, Lawrence? Two Arsenal players, well, one former Arsenal player, the cornerstones of the team, Petr Cech and Tomáš Rosický, of course. They obviously deposed Netherlands at the top of their qualifying group, beat them to the tournament, essentially. The problem with them is they conceded a lot of goals. They conceded more goals than any other team going into this European Championship in the qualifying.
Any other team?
Yeah. In this qualifying round.
Yeah, but they do have a lovely kit, though, don't they, Adam?
Not as good as Croatia's. So,
why would you just be comparing them to Croatia?
Just because I saw the Croatia kit today, and I was like, "It's bloody really nice."
Really bloody nice. Which kit's your favourite kit of the tournament?
Probably Croatia. It's really, really nice. Yeah, or I do quite like the France away kit with the sort of tricolour.
Yeah, the tricolour is very nice, isn't it?
Back onto the Czech Republic, though.
Yeah, back to Czech Republic.
Decent.
Yeah, obviously, I think their problem not only is that they sort of don't seem all that loaded at the back because of the amount of goals they've conceded, but they have a lot of midfield promise, but very little sort of striking promise in that sense at this tournament. If you can shut them down, then I think they're not going to get very much joy. Mm. And I think for that reason, within this group, which I'm not going to call the group of death, but I'm going to call the group of maybe the most quality in the tournament.
Yeah.
I think what we are going to see is that the third place team in this group possibly won't qualify, because I think there are going to be...
Yeah, it's going
to
be tough.
Yeah, like it's basically going to be tough. Whereas in other groups, I think we'll see it maybe even out a little more, and therefore teams are going to become a bit more fortunate to come through from those groups. When it comes down to Czech Republic, though, I mean, you know, you've got the captain, Rosický. Everyone still, he only seems to be fit for international tournaments. and then, sort of looking at the back, I'm only really happy that they've got Petr Cech sort of sitting behind that defence. But then you say they've conceded so many goals, so... What's to be positive
doesn't
about?
Guarantee, yeah, doesn't, definitely doesn't guarantee you clean sheets. What about Croatia, Dave? I said they got the best kit in the tournament, potentially the best midfield in the tournament as well, but they might not be so blessed in other areas of the pitch.
Yeah, I think they've got a very good midfield. Rakitic, Modric, and whoever plays in behind, whether it's Beljar, I think it is. I've not looked at the pronunciation sheets. I've probably got that wrong. Sorry, lads.
Badelj?
Bardelli, yeah, that's the fella.
Bardelli,
front, obviously.
Bardelli,
Bardelli, that was it. Bardelli, no, that's that. Nailed it.
It's
Thank you, lads. Thank you. Yeah, up front they've got a good lad in Mario Mandzukic, a player that I fucking hate, but he's decent. I just don't after the whole Juventus catastrophe where
you really
came
got
on
him there, didn't
bloody
you?
Bloody bottled it. Just didn't do anything.
He's not that effective either for Croatia, is he?
But yeah, I think they've got some quality. Perisic has always been a decent player, goal scoring wise. Pretty upset that Halilovic isn't there, you know, young Croatian talent. But they'll do well. They've got a decent back four. I think they'll just be a team that will tick over the group, and then at the last stages, they'll probably come up against the big cheese and get done.
The final team in this group is Turkey.
Yes, fantastically stacked team in the midfield, especially the attacking midfield. You know, there's so much. I do think I like their the balance of the midfield. And you know, there's going to be so many battles played out there, and the fact that they do have players who are able to become a bit more physical, push other players off the ball, and then push it out to not only someone who's sort of physically gifted, but also able to become a little bit more tricky. The likes of Arda Turan, Nuri Sahin sitting there. Tufan, and obviously the man that most people are very excited about at the moment, which is, how do you say him?
Çalhanoğlu.
There you go.
Çalhanoğlu.
Apparently.
Çalhanoğlu.
Lawrence, do you think they could even finish top of the group? Or you're not going to go that far?
Do I think Turkey have got enough to top the group?
Yeah. We're not going to go that.
The only reason I would say that Turkey won't top the group is because, you know what? Why shouldn't Turkey top the group? Because if Spain. if they can win the midfield battle against those other teams, that's my only issue. Is that are they really realistically going to win the midfield battle against the likes of Spain? Ooh. But then with Spain, Spain don't really, I feel, have a striker that's going to be able to threaten them. They probably will win the midfield battle with Croatia. And then with Czech Republic, I think it would be very much 50-50. You know what? I'm going to go Turkey as the outside dark horses to top this group.
What's your order?
I'll go... Because originally, the thing is, Turkey originally didn't have all that good a time in qualifying until they sort of found this shape. And I'm wondering if now they've got to find another shape. And people are going to cut off the supply to people like Yilmaz. So I'm going to go Spain, Turkey, Czech Republic, Croatia.
What, Croatia bottom?
Ooh, Dave, what are you saying?
Lawrence, you're a crazy man.
Crazy.
I mean, Spain, going to have an identity crisis, but...
No, wait a minute. Let me swap those two around.
Too late.
I'm going to go...
Done, mate. Done, mate.
Croatia, Czech Republic, because that's... Yeah.
That's sensible.
I like Rakitic and, Modric, but...
Dave, what were you saying? You were going Spain...
Spain, Croatia.
Yeah.
Turkey, and then the Czech Republic.
I'm going to say Croatia, Spain, Turkey, Czech Republic. Croatia's really? Top of the group, guys. You heard it first. Moving on to Group C.
I think Croatia will come third. I think they'll come behind Turkey.
We did say last a bit ago. So Germany.
Yeah, that was just because I misread my list.
Germany, Northern Ireland, Poland, and the Ukraine in Group C then. Obviously, Germany, the favourites to finish top, Dave. One of the favourites, of course, again, to win the whole thing. But it does feel like they're lacking that striker.
No, they got a striker, Adam. They got Mario Gomez. The Gomez button is by. Hold on, lads. 2 seconds.
I know they've got Mario Gomez.
So Mario Gomez, 28 goals for Beşiktaş this season, taking them through to win the Turkish league.
He's the only out-and-out striker in their squad. Hello. Hello. Might get
Dave,
copyright.
We don't need
strike
another.
Might get copyright strike.
Have you never? Have you, lads? You must have been on the Mario Gomez button, right?
Yeah, we've all been on that. Yeah.
Oh,
cha-cha.
Dear. Oh, dear.
I think.
You've been serious.
I love that. I used to like turn my computer volume up like as high as it possibly could be, like in the middle of the office, and just play the button.
It's a wonder that you've still got a job, frankly.
I might start doing that tomorrow. Wow, so
why?
I just love the button, Lawrence. It's just so good, right? You push it once, you're going to always push it for the rest of your life, right?
Just press it one more time then, Dave. Now, everyone who's listening, imagine working with Dave.
You see my face as well when it's going. Is that the joke?
I can imagine Dave like that, like a little five-year-old kid, sort of.
So much fun. But anyway, yeah, Germany, they tactically have got a lot of diversity. You know, Mario Götze could play as a false nine. Joachim Löw likes to do that. Mesut has had his best season in the Premier League with his assists. You've got Thomas Müller outside that scored 20 goals in the Bundesliga. You know, wide left, obviously, Marco Reus isn't going to be there, but there's a lot of talent there. You know, Schürrle, whoever wants to fit there. Then in midfield, they've got Toni Kroos and Khedira. Bastian Schweinsteiger at the back. They've got probably the best two centre-backs in the world right now that are probably playing together in Hummels and Boateng. They're going to be awesome next season. Fullbacks is the only thing that I'd look at and be like, ooh. Because you've got Hector on one side that's pretty decent going forward, but then Emre Can on the right. When Emre Can was at Bayer Leverkusen, he played left-back, not right-back. It's just a bit of a weird one. Is Emre Can left-footed or right-footed, Lawrence?
Good question. Having watched him, I'm not sure he's either, Dave.
Uh-oh.
I don't know. I think he's played a number of positions, and he played right back for Liverpool for a little while. I think I genuinely think that they're just trying to fit him into this team at times. And then there's been a couple of games where he hasn't even started for Germany more recently. So I feel genuinely like that's the only position where they sort of lack, and that's going to be their soft underbelly in a sense, because Chan is not a fullback, and it's that simple.
Do you not think they're not going to play Mario Gomez at front, are they? And they're not going to do something similar to what they did at the World Cup and stick Gertz right
there. False nine of Müller.
The old false nine. Or Müller, yeah. They're not going to play. You're not going to get the chance to press that Gomez button, Dave.
I think Gomez is going to be one of the shining stars of the tournament.
I bet you 20 quid he doesn't start the first game.
That's a good question, actually.
Adam, will you stop taking my money?
I bet you 20 quid he doesn't start the first game. He'll come on, maybe, but he won't start.
Oh, man, I don't know if I could.
Why don't you go £10 that he doesn't even play in the first game?
I'll give no, because he Adam, probably will come on as a sub.
Right? I bet you a Nando's that he starts the first game.
Yes, I fucking love it.
Right.
Dave and I, the first two presenters on the Football Republic, Adam, for the live show.
No, I think it's me and you because Dave's not around.
Is it you and I?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic! Yeah. All right, can we get Nando's?
Mario Gomez. It depends if I'll make a bet with you, and then we'll see if that comes off. If you win, you get Nando's. If I win, I get burritos, the best food.
Burritos. Okay. Well, either way, I'm a winner.
Yeah. I feel like there's no losers in the situation.
Yeah. There's no losers in a food betting situation, is
it? Okay, Dave.
Anyway, back to accepted. Group C.
Except. Let's talk about Northern Ireland, because incredible qualifying campaign, Lawrence. Top in the group ahead of Romania, of course. Living up to all the cliches, difficult side to break down.
You know what? The only problem for Northern Ireland is they come out in this group. If they'd have come out in any other group, you'd given them a chance of getting through. Put it this way, I think Northern Ireland are the team with the best chance of finishing third. Ahead of Ukraine.
Ahead of the Ukraine. Dave, do you reckon Northern Ireland can finish ahead of the Ukraine? Because I feel like, you know, the Ukraine, again, don't have the most talented squad, but they've got a few star men in there, which is something, apart from Will Grigg, that Ireland lack, Northern Ireland.
Yarmolenko, you know, very, very talented playmaker out wide. Conor Planianka as well. I feel that the Ukraine are going to come third. I feel like they've got enough quality to come third ahead of Northern Ireland. You say Northern Ireland again, lack anything apart from Paddy McNair. Rocking in central midfield. I suppose Steve Davis is pretty decent, but again, this is just a lack of quality. The interesting one, though.
Ollie Norwood. Come on, that's a little bit harsh on Ollie Norwood.
I do like Ollie Norwood, you know, but he's championship level, right? He's not going to be beating the likes of Germany or the Ukraine or even Poland, who are going to be really interesting. Lewandowski and Majlik up front. Yeah. That's 51 goals this season, and both in their domestic, you know, Majlik was 21 goals in their Eredivisie, Lewandowski 30 goals. If they can get that front two firing in this tournament, they're going to be really, really dangerous.
And there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to get those front two firing, because they've got great supply. They've got some players who are more than capable of supplying, you know, the assists for the likes of those two. So I'm quietly confident
So they lost one of their wingers. I think his name was like Roski or something like that. That I've absolutely butchered his name. I think he's injured himself in training or something. He provided the most assists in qualifying. But I suppose Lewandowski's just Lewandowski. I think if you build a team like Dortmund used to do, where they used to play to him early, you're laughing, really. He's just going to create all sorts of things. What, 13 goals in qualifying? I think this Polish side could be, again, sneak in there undetected. Could be a real handful in their last.
I think they're 4 years better than they were a couple of years ago. They pretty much collapsed under the
pressure.
Well, no, because not every team becomes 4 years better, do they?
Well, 4 years worse.
But what I would say with this side is they collapsed under the pressure of the hosting in their own nation, and things got a little bit too much for this Turkey team. For this Poland team. So. I think they're going to bring in quite a bit of experience into this tournament. I'm going to say those guys finish second in the group.
Second. Germany, Poland, Ukraine, Northern Ireland. I'm sorry, not that.
I won't be disenchanted with that. Yeah, that's not.
Yeah.
Although we're not really calling that many dark horses in this, are we?
David Healy.
Group
Where's
B,
your
though?
Insight? Oh, group let B, rest though,
guys.
Levels.
This is where the dark horses come in. England, Russia. Slovakia and Wales.
Zuba,
very interesting
Zuba,
group.
Zuba.
Very, very interesting group. We'll start on England because it's our country, of course. We know it the best, I assume. Obviously, a wealth of talent up front. 4 or 5 strikers being taken. Centre defence, obviously the weakness, Dave. Only 3 centre-backs, although Eric Dyer can play there. It doesn't feel quite like things have gelled yet. It doesn't feel like Roy Hodgson's figured out a system to crowbar in all the best players and the players that are arguably on form, as well as Wayne Rooney.
Yeah, I don't think he will. I think that's Roy Hodgson down for an absolute tee. But imagine this, right? Imagine this front three. I was thinking about this today. Jamie Vardy through the middle. Rashford out wide right. Okay. Sterling wide left. That
has
got so
much
pace. Where is
Harry Kane?
Sorry, Adam, this is my pace team. It's like when you play FIFA and you pick all the quick players.
Yes, good
point. Yeah, but why can't we play him in EK?
Lawrence, the wrong nationality.
But you do feel like it's a little bit of... you almost can't win, really, because you feel like, oh, you've got to put in Rooney, but then, oh, do you put in Vardy or Kane? Oh, no, you've got to try and put in both. And where'd you put Ali? Oh, but then you've got to put Wilshere. It's a little bit... It is difficult to try and fit them all in the same team, and difficult decisions need to be made, and perhaps Roy Hodgson hasn't shown that he can make those difficult decisions, essentially.
Nah, he's a bottler, isn't he, Roy?
Just a bottler, as you put it?
I don't think he's a bottler, but I think he's not one to take bold decisions. I think I'd be very impressed if he doesn't start Rooney for at least one of the games. I'd be like, wow, bloody hell. You know, this is the way forward, almost. Play Ali instead of Rooney in that sort of attacking midfield role. And it just seems like common sense, but because Rooney's the captain, because there's a narrative around it almost to sound like Lawrence McKenna, it feels like it's difficult for him to drop Rooney and maybe put in the players who should be there, essentially.
Yeah, I guess if you don't play... Yeah, there doesn't really seem to be much argument for playing Rooney very often, does there?
No, but yeah, he will persist. And he will start against Russia on Saturday.
Yeah, unfortunately.
We don't sound massively optimistic, but I do, however, think England will top the group. I do think they will top the group. Because I think it will at least be 2 of the teams, which should be enough to hopefully get us top, if we can get a draw in the other one.
Who's we?
We are England, guys. Where's the patriotism, Lawrence? The Euros are 2 days away.
Don't have any, mate.
Right. Wales, then. Another team touted as a one-man team, Dave. Gareth Bale, obviously. Well, he did score. Didn't he score? We contributed. They scored
Adam,
something like 10 or 11
goals.
The
stat sheet is there for you.
Oh, he scored
Gareth
7
Bale
goals.
Bale was directly involved in 82% of Wales' goals in qualifying.
I mean,
come
that's
on.
That's quite a stat, isn't it, Lawrence?
That is quite a stat, but then that's not to say that other players haven't done great things. He's a fantastic player. A lot of things go through him, but you don't say that in the Champions League. You don't go, Ronaldo scored, I don't know what percentage of goals Ronaldo scored for Real Madrid, but you don't beat them with that stick, do you?
I think you
do.
Yeah, I think you do, I was about to say. when 82% of the goals have come essentially through Gareth Bale, goals and assists, that means they're almost entirely reliant on Gareth Bale. So therefore,
yeah, but Adam, come on, Robson Kanu.
Yeah, come on. You make a good point. Do you think Wales will get out of the group, Dave? Because a lot of people have these guys pegged as bottom of the group finishers.
No, I don't think they're bottom at all. I think there's a really interesting article in the Wales Online, actually, which is an interview with Chris Coleman that's talking about why he picked certain systems for certain games and qualifying. Quite frankly, he's done very well, and they've sort of stumbled on this system, this 3-4-2-1 system with Bale and Ramsey behind Robson Kanu, and it really works. You know, those two players in the free role, Ramsey and Bale, really are cutting teams apart on the counter attack. You know, Robson Kanu's doing a lot of defensive work, pressurising the opposition. But that's quite a mismatch against a lot of systems in world football now. You'd say that's if they're playing a single pivot, that's 2v1. If they're playing two pivots, they've lost the midfield battle to Ledley and Joe Allen. Sorry. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of questions. You've got to play differently to that. So I think that Wales have got, I'd say, a bit more than England in a way.
Wow, really?
Well, I mean, I'm also looking at the back line. Dave's right in saying they can play three at the back. I also like when they play four. I think it makes them a lot more defensively solid. They played it towards the end of the campaign. They didn't just play three at the back. And it sort of gave them more options. Not only that, but it would almost be a little confusing to another side out there as to how one team was going to start or the other. I did also enjoy, there's somewhere online, there is a really nice interview with either Ashley Richards or Ashley Williams, I can't remember, but he basically says that they're either good lads or quiet for basically the entire squad. I think it's 442 interviewed him, and he basically says for every answer, yeah, he's a good lad, he's quiet. And you're just sort of like, oh, brilliant. Okay, so Wales are just full of quiet men.
You put forward a good case there, Dave. You sound like tactically Wales have got this system where they can spring a surprise almost, and maybe we should give them more of a chance. What about Slovakia there then? Do you think they've got a chance of finishing third, maybe?
Again, they're built around one man, and that's Hamzik, you know, the Napoli central midfielder that's really coming of age in that creative role. You look at Napoli's midfield this season, they've got the perfect combination, Jorginho, someone we didn't even mention for Italy. Crazy that he's not starting for Italy without Verratti and Marchisio, you know, the top passer in Serie A this season. So he's the passer in their midfield. They've got Allen, who's the destroyer, that's top tackler in Serie A. And then Hamzik's the top creator in Serie A this season. So they've got, you know, they have one player that they could build a team around, which could go, you know, could work out quite nicely for them. Top scoring in qualification with 5 goals for them. So they, again, this group is so difficult to call. I think this is the hardest group. Might not be the group of death, but it's the hardest one to say who's going through.
They're all the most mediocre sides.
Yeah, they are so by average.
Yeah.
England.
Or at least they present that way. England have a number of players in there that are above average players in Europe. But put them together and combine them, and you've made, you know, it's not a Megazord. And I think there are other people there that have Megazords.
I just feel like England have got so much. You look for the other squad lists, and a lot of them have one or two or three star players. And obviously, you know, I feel like I have a more intimate knowledge of England, so therefore, maybe this opinion is complete rubbish. But there is quality throughout. I know, you know, there is obviously that weakness in defence, but I feel like, yes, although we don't have a system yet that works. Roy Hodgson hasn't managed to get the players playing in a way that works for all of them. The actual talent is there. So I feel like saying they're mediocre is a bit harsh. I think it's a good, young, promising squad with a sprinkling of some great players. Dele Alli, Harry Kane. Not adjustment.
Yes, Adam, but those players have to perform, and those players have to entertain. And I think that's part of a tournament, is that actually it's not just about the getting through. Mm. It's the taking part that counts.
It is indeed.
And sometimes England barely even take part.
What is your...
It does feel a little bit like England aren't there sometimes, doesn't it? It's just a little bit, you're here.
I'm just a little bit
like the friend at a party that you sort of go, oh yeah, thanks for coming.
Maybe it's the pre-tournament hype, but I'm feeling quite optimistic.
You're Ian Wrighting it.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. But I feel like there is talent in that squad, and I think England will finish top of the group. I don't think it's going to be, I think it's going to be easy by any stretch of the imagination, but I think they will finish first. I think Dave sort of sold me on Wales there. I think they'll be battling for second with Russia. Maybe I'll put Wales second, you know, for a bit of British support. Russia third, Slovakia fourth. That's what I'm going to go for. England, Wales, Russia, Slovakia. Lawrence, what do you say?
I hope Russia self explode.
Nice. and finish last?
I'm finished last, yeah.
Okay, so where are the, what's the top three order?
England, I think, I think whether England or Wales finish top will be down to their own results against each other.
Yeah.
I think Wales will snatch it, so I'm going to go Wales, England.
Oh, no.
Slovakia, Russia.
Dave, what are you saying? Come on. England to top.
Russia again are going to be a little bit of an unknown quantity. They've lost both Denisov and Zagaev, two holding midfielders. But with Zubar up front, did very well in the Champions League this season. Scored 7 goals there, top scored for Russia in qualification. So they've got a striker in form. But this group is so difficult.
Come on, Dave.
I think they're all going to get the same points, all right? They're all going to be joint.
What?
How can that happen?
That's insane. I don't know. Who's going to top the group, Dave?
Imagine if they then wrote to another group and just went, sorry, none of you guys qualify because we had to take all three or four people through from Group B.
It's coming home. It's coming home. It's coming. Go on, Dave.
Fine. England, Wales, Russia, Slovaquia.
Nice.
Woof.
I'll allow it. Group A.
And then one of the best groups.
We come to Group A to finish on Albania, France, Romania, Switzerland. We'll finish on France, host nation. So we'll start, I think, with Switzerland. Now, obviously, there's a few Premier League names in there that we'll mention. Granit Xhaka, just signed for Arsenal. We've got Shaqiri for Stoke. Brile Mbolo, the young striker who's linked with every major Premier League club all the time. You feel like they've got quality again, Dave. Good centre-backs. Good attackers.
Good centre backs.
Yeah, Fabian Giroud. Why not?
They got such a mistake in them. It's unreal.
Ricardo Rodriguez.
It's like playing. It's like playing the Chuckle Brothers at centre back.
All right, you've shot that one down. I thought Fabian Schär was supposed to be decent. Ricardo Rodriguez, then he's a good defender. Lichtsteiner.
He's not been that good this year, actually. To be honest, he had a fantastic last two campaigns, but this time he's had a little bit of a lull in his career. But he's a good player.
Okay, Switzerland then.
Okay.
You think they're going to finish second, maybe? I think France are everyone's favourites to top it.
Yeah, I think they're, you know, think players like Shaqiri and Xhaka got enough quality, and especially Shaqiri just seems to come alive in international tournaments as one of only two players that scored a hat-trick at the 2014 World Cup.
Yes.
Only Lionel Messi created more chances than him. It seems like, obviously, in his career, he's been a bit of a, you know, it's fallen down with being at Bayern and Inter Milan and now Stoke and not being the main man there. So I think that this is sort of his chance to revive his career at the big stage.
Yeah, just feel like they've got a good squad. It looks promising. Maybe not a great centre-back pair then, but at least that defence looks solid, I'm going to say.
Solid, great. I'll give you that.
Yeah, not like, you know,
a load of
solid.
Nebulous words to describe a side. Yeah, Italy look...
decent.
Yeah, solid.
They look decent, yeah. Talk to me a little bit about Romania then, Lawrence.
A couple of star guys in there up front, but it's basically they're through because of their solid defence in this one.
Solid.
I think, did they only conceded 2 goals in 10 qualifiers in this one? And there was a tweet that I saw earlier today. An incredibly impressive one for Romania. Their only problem is that if what?
You might say they're rock solid, you know, an upgrade almost from Switzerland.
From being sort of, you know, stone solid.
Yeah.
I would say their only issue is that if you take out their main guys, they've not got much else.
Okay.
And so, especially within this group, where you'd imagine that, you know, Albania are going to be extremely difficult to break down. And then, obviously, France are going to be utterly dominant as the home side. It's really going to be Romania and Switzerland duking it out, in my humble opinion,
Albania,
for the third place.
Dave.
I think Albania are ahead of that.
At the first major tournament.
Yeah, fantastic. Great. You really think, great. I mean,
you think they're going to finish ahead of Romania?
History-making Albania. Yeah, history-making Albania. Nice. I think I and Andy Brassel, and Andy Brassel is a massive voice in European football, think that Albania will finish second in this group.
Wow. That is a
they've
big
got heart.
Tool.
They're a solid side. Not only that, but I think that they will fuck a few people up in the group.
Yeah. Let's go on to France then. They may well fuck up a few people.
Main guy for them, Lorik Sanna.
Yes.
And they definitely have some of the hardest names to say in the tournament.
Yes, they do indeed. Dave, France, do they have the best squad in this entire bloody competition?
Oh, I'd say it's up there. I'd say Germany, France, two best squads in the tournament.
Ooh.
France have a lot of talent. They've had a lot of injuries, and they've still got a very, 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 very strong side. You know, it's centre back Raphael Varane obviously getting injured, but Rami can step in there, also Umtiti. France definitely don't lack depth at centre back. Again, going back to the previous podcast where we criticised certain people in the media for their blasphemy, saying that France had no game changers, which of course they do. They've got a very solid system. They play this 4-3-3 under Deschamps. So I think they're set. They really,
stacked.
Really are set.
Stacked is
they're
the
stacked high of talent.
What is
you know, someone like Anthony Martial going to explode in the tournament? Tony Griezmann, Olivier Giroud. I want Giroud to lift the trophy just because he's been booed by his own fans.
Bless him.
I love a story where somebody's come back from adversity, you know, from people hating on him, and he wins. So I hope that happens. But Gignac obviously is a very good backup. Done very well in Mexico since he's moved there. Obviously a very strange move, but you know, top scorer in Mexico. So it's a very, very, very good side. And with Koscielny in there, we all know what his quality is. And now N'Golo Kanté coming into the first 11. There's just so much quality and so much legs in that midfield, especially. So, which sort of means that the front three could be lazy in defence.
Yeah. Well, Dave, what is France's...
Sorry, it works out.
What is their weakness? There must be one weakness in this team. Their Achilles heel.
If you run at that back line and they get scared, they freeze. You know, we saw it against Cameroon in the friendly. We've seen it in other instances as well. It's not that Patrice Evra is not a good defender. I think he's fantastic. But I definitely think if you run at them, and you definitely run at them down the left-back side, or
yeah,
actually even
Evra's pushing
down the
back,
right back.
Say, yeah. He's pushing 35,
well.
Isn't he, Evra?
Yeah, I mean,
Sanya
yeah,
must
I, don't
be
even,
close
I don't even
to
think
that.
It's down to his age.
Pace will expose that.
That was part of the issue, was that Cameroon attacked quickly and sort of struck, and France were caught out. And that's their only problem. What you would say is they're not so worried about that because they believe they can out-muscle, out-attack the other team, and that it won't get to that because hopefully they won't lose control on the game.
I think that's the big thing, right, with France. They've got to smash the group, just score goals for fun, be very attacking. You know, maybe win 3-2, 4-3, those types of games. And then when it gets to the knockout stage, it's got to get really solid, sit deep and use their pace on the counter, and then that's how they win the tournament. Simple.
Give me
Is it simple?
Your
well,
order,
just go and do it, then.
Dave.
Simple as shit, right?
Albania, France, Romania, Switzerland. Go.
France, Switzerland, Albania. And then Romania. Romanians, I think.
Two brothers playing each other. Interesting, two brothers playing each other in this one. I mean, Albania playing Switzerland will be a big game in this group because of the diaspora at one point. A lot of Kosovans playing for that Swiss side. Obviously, a lot of Kosovans also playing for Albania. So that's going to be an interesting one. I think it's going to go France, Albania, Switzerland, Romania.
No. Guys, there we have it. We are at the end of our Euro 2016 Group F to A preview. No, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed talking through all the teams, you know, getting a little bit of a lowdown from you guys, or discussing where the strengths are, the weaknesses. I know what to expect now, which players to look out for. I found it very interesting.
I would love to know. We're thinking of different videos that we can make for the Euros, and one of them would be who our listeners tip to be good players during the Euros. Maybe what we'll do is we'll do the top five front three listening tips for the tournament.
Yeah.
So if you've got a play you want to tip, or you've got a particular squad or a particular formation or something in particular that you want to sort of say, hey everyone, look at this.
Yeah.
Let us know on Twitter.
You know, I'm talking about how we know the England team intimately. If you're a fan of one of the countries going, get in touch on Twitter at @TheFrontThree or on the Reddit. Let us know, like Lauren says, the players to be looking out for. What should we get excited about going into this tournament from your team? That would be
and we might. I mean, if you're listening tonight or tomorrow, then we might end up making a pre-tournament video, just going through some of your tweets and some of your comments. I'd love to do that. Can we just say one thing? Definitely thank Soliman for his fantastic gifts over the past week.
What a hero!
If you haven't checked them out, we do retweet them every week. But Soliman, a longtime friend of the podcast, has been making some pretty incredible gifts over the past few weeks. So definitely check them out. I particularly enjoyed last week's one, Lawrence. I believe. Yeah.
I showed that to my dad, and my dad was like, "Good God, it makes you look so violent." And I was like, "Yes, my God."
Yes, very good stuff from Soliman. Definitely do check them out. I'll keep my fire.
What are you guys most looking forward to about Euro 26? I think I'm definitely looking forward to the fact it's in France. I'm a little bit worried about the whole terrorism thing, if I'm a little bit honest.
Yes, having read a fantastic article on the BBC yesterday about. Terror attacks earlier in the year, it just does fill you with dread, the fact that people could target this tournament. Fingers crossed, touch wood, all that stuff, that it doesn't happen. And hopefully we do.
So apparently the ID everyone has to have like carry ID with them, photo ID.
Yeah, but that doesn't really mean anything for, you know, you don't need to be in the ground to cause problems. That'll be my only.
No, as in the photo ID round Lille. So I'm staying in Lille for the opening weekend, and apparently you've always got to have ID on you all the time.
Interesting.
It's quite interesting. But, you know, I think terrorism shouldn't govern your life. I think you should still go out and do what you want to do.
Oh, so no,
if I want
no,
to go
absolutely.
To a football, I'll fucking go.
No, but...
Then, you know what?
Hopefully nothing.
I'll take him out.
I'm looking forward to... The thing I'm most looking forward to is England winning, of course. England winning that trophy after so many years. 20 years after...
Do you really think that could even happen?
You were...
Realistically think that could even happen?
No. I mean, it could, but it's not going to happen.
Why not, would be my question.
For all the reasons you listed about two minutes ago. I'm just looking forward to seeing some fantastic football. I said, you know, the group stage of any of these tournaments is just such a fantastic feast of football. 2-3 games a day. It's just such an exciting time. You get to see all these wonderfully talented players that you may not have heard of, you may not get to see every week. So I'm very excited about the group stages in particular, especially if England do well.
There doesn't seem to be anyone that's particularly weak or sort of self-destructing. Do they? I mean, I know that there are, you know, we've just graded all the sides.
Well, there'll be someone.
I definitely think I'm looking forward to watching every side. Do you know, like, that's the great thing about being pre-tournament.
Every side's got something.
24 teams. Yeah, exactly. And all of this is like the sort of the they're all virgin teams. Do you know what I mean?
No.
I don't mean it in the sense, you know, right. I mean it in the extra virgin olive oil sort of sense, not a kind of a sexual sense. I sort of mean, like, you know, we've not seen you are the dirty pig, Dave. Your mind did that, and you're the one pressing the Gomez.
Mario Gomez.
If you listen back to the podcast, a split second before Dave pressed that button, I definitely said you were pressing the Mario Gomez button.
I hit it before.
I'm not sure you did, Dave.
I did, mate. Adam, you check on the coding, yeah? You tell the truth.
Adam, go and check the coding of the podcast.
I'm going to go into the Matrix and see. Don't worry about it, guys.
But 24 teams, each of them, I'm equally excited to see each of them.
We are hyped, Guy.
We are going up. Say we are going up.
Guys, thank you so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this podcast. It's extra long, bumpered edition of the Front Three. Let us know what you think is going to happen in Euro 2016 on Twitter at The Front Three. Let us know your predictions. Stay in touch over the course of the tournament. I think we're going to be trying to do little podcasts every day, maybe.
What should we try and do?
Little bite-sized ones, maybe.
And then obviously there's also Copa America stuff. As the Copa America gets even more interesting as we go.
And of course, all three of us will be on the Football Republic throughout the tournament doing live streams of all the major games. So tune in there if you want to see more of my face, Dave's face, and especially Lawrence's little face.
I have a tiny face, but a big head.
So small. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Until next time, have a bloody great week and enjoy the opening match of the Euros. Hopefully, we'll be back on Friday with a little.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Bite-sized pod.
Can you say copyright?
Cha-cha.